Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Matt Enders, Tony Bemis, and Mary Tomich.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
Kevin O'Brien.
In for Mary Tomich.
That's right. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
All right. So, I've got a bit of business for my side business stuff. People are actually asking me to do things now. I was getting really worried there for a little bit, but I figured it's probably just the summer. Everybody wanted the summer. I didn't have anybody ask me about anything for like 4 months. Anyway, so it's been a busy week this week and a stressful day yesterday with a server upgrade and stuff, but everything ended up rebooting and working. So it was a restful sleep last night. Anyway, so what's going on with you guys? Or Matt?
Thanks for remembering my name, Tony. No, I had a bit of a busy week, too. Work was really busy at my 9-to-5-er, actually 7-to-7 job. But I had another incident where I was out racking servers, and I had 3 servers to rack, and it was about an hour left. I figured I could get 3 servers racked and get out of there and then just go home from the remote location. And I got 2 of the servers racked and all was good. They got racked and got pinging. Started to rack the third server. Actually racked the third server, started to ping it, and then realized that I had installed Linux on it and it was supposed to be a Windows server.
Oh no.
I got a hold of the night guy though, and he said he'd come out and install Windows on it for me.
Oh, that's
because
nice.
Because I did him a favor. After I got done racking all the servers, I had to go to another one of our remote locations and re-IP a server because it had the wrong IP address and NetMask and couldn't get out anywhere. So,
do you guys use network KVMs?
No.
Oh, because that would resolve it.
Yeah, we just use SSH.
Yeah. So if it's not on the network, then
we're
screwed.
Fucked.
You have to walk. You have to physically go to the machine?
Yes.
All right.
Which sometimes entails driving many miles.
Yeah.
So that's that. And then here at Gaudier Academy, my only client left from my business, they're getting new computers in their computer lab. Well, new to them. Not new. Because
right.
I've already had 3 that don't post.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 2 of them don't post at all. And 1 of them, when you turn it on, instead of a post screen, you get the Matrix.
The Matrix?
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
I've never seen
that either. I'll show it to you after the show. It's the wildest thing ever.
Wow. All right.
But that's my way.
So it has like green letters.
No, they're
and
white.
Numbers.
They're white. But still, it's.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I wonder if it's a video card problem.
I don't know. I've never seen that before.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
A little bit.
So, Kevin, what's up?
Well, in my day job, I'm a project manager. I will try not to bore you with too much of that. But I started a contract 3 weeks ago with the state of Michigan, completed the project plan and got through all the last approval was yesterday, so we're good to go. But I thought maybe what I would do is mention something. I say I'm a contractor. I bill by the hour, and I was looking for some convenient, easy way to keep track of my hours and put out a call for help on Google+, and it was answered by Door-to-Door Geek, a wonderful fellow who I think many people listening to this podcast probably know.
Yeah, I enjoy listening to him. I think he's very informative.
He's a great guy. And so he responded right away with a couple of suggestions, one of which I took him up on. It's something called time recording. A free app available in the Google Play Store for Android devices. And, you click a button to check in when you arrive and click another button to check out when you leave. And then there's a button for break. So, you know, at lunch I just hit that and say, you know, I'm off the clock for half an hour while I get something to eat. And so when I filled out my time card last night, I just opened up my app and just kind of went through Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, picked up those totals, and
That's nice.
Does it log what you're doing too? Do you have to report that? Like worked on this part of the project for 30 minutes, this part of the project for 80 minutes?
I think it does, but I don't need to do that. he did, Dore did say that it came very highly recommended by Tracy Holtz. You know, it looks like it'll do a lot, and it certainly had a lot of good ratings and downloads in the Google Play Store, you can see.
Because when I've worked as a contractor before, I had to say what I was working on for what time, because I was working on a couple of different projects at the same time.
Sure, sure. So, no, I understand. That's not a bad way to do things either. So I haven't needed to do that. But it, you know, it looks like you can. It's got a switch task thing, and you know, a notes feature.
The switch task would do that. Would you know, keep track of different tasks.
So it's got lots of stuff.
What's the name of the app again?
Time Recording.
Just Time Recording?
Yeah,
yeah, that's, cool.
That's pretty cool.
Look for it in the Google Play Store. So it definitely solved a need for me. And again, you know, props to Door-to-Door Geek for coming to my rescue. As he does so often.
All right.
So that was my big discovery of the week.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
Oh, yeah, that would be me, I guess, eh? Kernel news. As of right now, there is no release candidate this week. Stable updates. We did have quite a few stable updates. However, on Wednesday, September 12th, 2012, at 11:04 Eastern Daylight Time, Ben Hutchings released kernel 3.2.29 with 84 files changed, 1,673 lines inserted, and 555 lines deleted. On Friday, September 14th, 2012, at 20:38 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Crow Hartman released kernel 3.0.43. with 47 files changed, 259 lines deleted, 259 lines inserted, and 150 lines deleted. Then, on Friday, September 14th, 2012, at 20:40 and 4 seconds Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Crow Hartman released kernel 3.4.11 with 88 files changed, 540 lines inserted, and 307 lines deleted. And then on Friday, September 14th, 2012, at 20:40 and 46 seconds Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Crow Hartman released kernel 3.5.4 with 114 files changed, 881 lines inserted, and 504 lines deleted. My kernel developer quote this week comes from Alan Cox. He says, "Swan Sea at its best. Just post-tour season. Lots of sun, but not blazingly hot. Sea, sand, and quiet. Fresh-made Lebanese lamb by Agine. From marvelous Lebanese pastry shop in town and Joe's ice cream. Alas, the one thing it won't do is magically finish the accounts for me, so back to paperwork." And that's all I have for the kernel.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
So back on the 9th, that's where we're going to start this week, we have PureOS 6.0. It's a desktop distro with GNOME 3, and it's based on Debian's testing branch.
Debian testing?
Yeah. Then I've never heard of this one. It sounds interesting. Epidemic Linux, or GN. Let's start that over. Epidemic Linux GNU. No, why am I saying this wrong?
It's good news.
A GNU. All right. Epidemic GNU /Linux 4.0. It's a Debian-based Brazilian desktop with KDE and a number of user-friendly enhancements. So the name's really interesting, but I didn't get to look at any screenshots. Do you know anything about it?
I have never heard of it.
No.
Has any distro ever advertised user unfriendly enhancements?
I haven't seen that one. Going on to the 11th, we have IPFire 2.11 Core 62, and that's a firewall distro, And I've used that one. I really like it. They kind of branched off from IPCOP and then made their own thing. And I like it. They just keep up to date and everything.
So, the firewall distro?
Yeah. So you can throw it on. What I did is I threw it on the laptop, and the screen had broken, so I didn't need a screen on a router. So I threw it on the laptop, threw it in the corner, had a battery backup, had everything going, so it was good.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, laptops aren't ideal for a lot of situations, but if you have to have just a lightweight server or something, with a battery backup, then laptops are awesome.
Yeah.
Or netbooks would be good for that, too.
I've done the same thing, but I've used pfSense instead of IPFire.
On a laptop?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
So we use at work, too, for our firewall for all the office PCs.
Laptops?
No, is pfSense.
Right. All right, cool. Then going on to the 12th, we have Parted Magic 2012 9/12, and they're especially CD live CD for partitioning utilities and disk management and data rescue.
Mm-hmm. That's one that you want to have that in your tool bag somewhere.
Oh yeah,
I tend on a USB stick or a CD, whatever.
Yeah, I tend to use Gparted Live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just because that's what comes to my mind first. I didn't think about using Parted Magic.
I'm there with you, Tony. The Gparted Live CD is what I use.
Yeah, apparently, if you're going to resize two volumes, one has 12 gigs, the other one has over 300 gigs, it takes about 9 hours to do it. I thought an hour, maybe. But
that seems kind of long. I did this at work not too long ago where I blew, it was 473 gig drives, and it wound up being like 10 300 gig drives.
Mm-hmm.
And it only took like 4 hours to blow that up. So
how much data was on them?
Oh, like nothing. So
right. Yeah, this had over 200 gigs of data, 300 gigs of data.
Okay.
I think that's what took so long. I had to move all that data and then resize the partition. But anyways, it took forever. No. But
yeah, so what took 8 of the 9 hours was moving 300 gigs worth of data and then about an hour to resize the partition. You know?
Well, actually, usually just resizing partitions takes like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's moving data takes forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's continuing on. We have the Super OS 11.10, and they are Ubuntu-based with extra applications, media codecs, and browser enhancements. So that's cool.
So what are they using for their desktop? Does it even say?
It's based on 11.10, Ubuntu 11.10. So I'm assuming they're still on GNOME 2.
No, Unity was the default.
In 11.10?
On 11.10, yeah.
Oh, when it went to 11.10.
It wasn't as well baked.
Right. And
that was the default.
That was the first.
No
that was
comment.
The first.
So, you mean, that's where you could really change back to GNOME 2, and I think most people did.
Yeah.
Unless they worked for Canonical and were dog-fooding it.
All right. Going on the 13th, we have Zentel 3.0. They're a major new version for the project's Ubuntu-based distribution for small servers. I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah, Zentel?
Yeah.
I've used it. It's got a nice graphical interface to all the server management. It's pretty decent.
Cool. We have Body Linux 2.1.0, and they're also Ubuntu-based with Enlightenment 17 as their desktop. Going on to OpenSUSE 12.2, EduLife, LI-F-E.
Yeah, that's their specific for education distribution, because 12.2 came out, what, about 2 or 3 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
About that.
No, something like that. It was either last week or 2 weeks ago. But their the reason it says LI-F-E is Linux, and then 4, and then education.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's like the neat way to give names and stuff, I think. Because a lot of the Linux and open source projects have really weird names. But I think that's cool how they did that one.
Yeah. I do too.
Spherical cow.
Right. Hey, lay off the spherical cow.
All right. On the 15th, we have Sabian Linux 10. They're Gentoo based with choice of environments of KDE, GNOME 3, Mate, or XFCE. And then the last one for this week we have on the 15th was Lightweight Portable Linux, or LPS 1.3.6. And that's the one that's put together by the DoD.
Yeah, for remote workers.
Yeah. So it's strictly live CD that has things to stop malware, keyloggers. It has their default links of to be able to remote in and stuff that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool.
Yep.
Now, does that mean if I get that distribution and install it, I'll be able to remote into the DoD?
I suppose if you have credentials to do it. Yeah, but, you know, talking about GNOME 3 and Mate and Unity, I went back to one of my old computers, and I had been using it for a remote computer for a while, and it died, so it's been down for about 3 months. I plugged it back in. I had to replace power supply. I plugged it back in, and I was using GNOME 2, and it just reminded me how much I liked it. I don't know what I'm going to do, but...
Try LXDE. If you like that GNOME...
I have. I
that,
don't...
That GNOME 2 unaccelerated interface?
Yeah, I've tried it, and LXDE, and I've tried XFCE, and...
I think LXDE is by far better than XFCE.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll give it another shot, but I don't know. There's.
I really liked LXDE, but now that I'm using an accelerated desktop,
I like the accelerated.
Yeah, not necessarily eye candy. I like the hot corner, and I like making my backgrounds transparent on my terminals. Because especially for work, I really need that. Because if I'm on three servers at once, running scripts on all three servers, I like to be able to see when one ends, you know, and you can do that with the transparent backgrounds on the on the terminals.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
Well, that's interesting. The first thing I turn off is hot corners. Can't stand it.
I love hot corners.
I can't stand it either. I turn it off too.
Yeah. I you know, if I try to get to the file menu in the upper left, and I miss by just this much, all of a sudden, I've got windows all over the screen. And
yeah.
It's like, why would anyone want to do this?
Well, because those of us that have actual manual dexterity and get to the right place that they're trying to go to.
You know, I'm with Kevin on this one. I was editing a show, and I'd have to go up, and each time I hit that corner, it blew everything up.
That never happens to me.
And the only time
I accidentally hit that kernel is when I picked up my laptop and I'm walking somewhere with it, and then the mouse is just going all over the screen. That's the only time I accidentally turn it on.
Yeah. I do it way too much. And then I've got all these windows all over, you know, all over the screen, and I'm trying to fit. I know which one was the one I was on, because I want to get back to it.
Right.
Well, that's I guess that's the thing about Linux, is that there's a lot of options, there's a lot of configurability, and, you know, everyone can set things up for the way they like. And
I agree. That's I like that
part. I want to know where you got all them stickers on your laptop, Kevin.
Various places. There's I think some
added to the stream.
I believe I got some of them from EFF at Ohio Linux Fest, and
so you have the Ubuntu user.
Yeah,
Coders
I'm
Rights.
Part of the loco for Ubuntu.
Yeah, I am.
Hey,
too.
We can't be talking about the Ubuntu loco on this show.
EFF.
Well, why not?
It's A2 Geeks. Then the Ubuntu, couple of Ubuntu Linux. There's a Linux works. So it works best with Linux.
You're in the stream, Kevin.
Slash Media. A couple more.
What's that
EFF
one that's upside down, the big yellow one? That's
five, EFF.org.
Is that
what it say
means?
On it? Defend bloggers' rights.
And then this white one over here that's upside down.
I don't know. TechGeek.com.
Is that what it is?
TheTechGeek.com.
Yeah. Techie Geek.
Techie Geek.
And,
oh, that's
down
a podcast, isn't it?
Coders' Rights.
Project. EFF.org.
I've got room for a few more small ones on here.
We should get some stickers for us and hand them out.
We should.
That's a great idea. Hand them out.
Get
SMLR
it?
Stickers.
Yeah.
I
don't know if we're going to be able
to
get
fix
them
the logo.
In 2 weeks.
I'll have to fix the logo, though.
We won't have them for Ohio Linux Fest, but maybe for the next one. Maybe next. Oh, yeah?
I'm going to try.
That'll be awesome.
We'll be doing it again next year, you
know. Right next door to where I work is a print shop. I'll go ask them.
Yeah?
Yeah, literally right next door.
Tell them we'll...
Attached.
We'll
it's
throw
the same
a little
building.
Ad on our show for them. No, all right. All right, let's continue on.
The distro of the week. According to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
And starting off at number 5, we have PC Linux OS with 1795.
And trending up.
Number 4 is Ubuntu with 1858.
And trending down.
Number 3 is OpenSUSE with 1954.
And trending up.
Number 2 is Magia with 2090.
And trending down. But hey, did they ever get that controversy with Magia straightened out? Are they really padding their hits or whatever?
I don't know. You know, I was letting you guys follow that.
I stopped following it. I don't know if they ever got that worked out or not.
Hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, moving on.
Although I think Mary contends that Mint is padding their because they have 5 different versions under one link.
It's all Mint.
Number 1 is Mint with 2904.
And trending up. Gotta love that minty goodness.
Yeah. So I want to put a little disclaimer here, and I think we talked about it a little bit ago, but I heard it again on a podcast the other day. They're talking about how invalid it is to use DistroWatch as a ranking.
Right.
And
we just got
to
run this clarification every couple of weeks. So.
Right. I can see the point of what they're saying, because it isn't a popularity contest that in DistroWatch. It's just the DistroWatch page for that distro.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's the only hits that are being counted.
Right. So it's not like Google Trending or whatever. So I think it was LAS, Linux Action Show, they were talking about, and then they were comparing it against their logs of what distro is hitting their pages and Wikipedia and a couple other things. And they're saying like 90, or no, over 70% was Ubuntu.
I believe it.
Yeah.
So, but my question is,
because you got all those sheeple out there that'll just install the popular thing.
But at what point do they do all these? If they're using the same packages, same sources to install Chrome, Chrome's mm-hmm. reporting this is Ubuntu, right? So if Mint is using the Ubuntu,
it doesn't
sources,
do that unless you tell it it's allowed to.
Well, Ubuntu has. Another advantage that most other distros don't have. There is a company behind it. The company offers support contracts, and so they get a lot of big deal, like Google.
Yeah. Google.
Everyone who works for Google
uses
has
Ubuntu,
an Ubuntu desktop.
And Google is not Canonical's largest customer either.
No.
So,
no, not
so. Yeah, they're not.
No,
so they won't say who is.
And
but.
They're all. I mean, I am always at least once a week. Yeah. It seems I see an announcement. You know that someplace just put in 30,000 Ubuntu desktops.
Yeah.
So, you know, a
that
school
is
system in France.
That's definitely what's driving
know.
Those numbers. You're
so
right.
there's a lot of stuff out there. I mean.
And maybe one day they'll turn the corner to become a profitable
company. You know,
I,
the thing that I find interesting about this is that, you know, for a long time, people who used Linux, who were Linux supporters, you know, why isn't Linux getting more support on the desktop? We want to get Linux on the desktop. Ubuntu's doing it, and the same people are going, well, I don't like them. I mean, that's Canonical. That's like
no comment. No comment. No comment.
Well, you know, there is something to be said for, you know, I work for large organizations where, you know, the rule is if there is not a vendor behind the product, it doesn't go in. You know, the CIO is going to say, "I want someone's throat I can choke." Mm-hmm. So Canonical's giving them that. It's like, okay, you know, we'll have that agreement. We'll have the contract. You'll have the vendor support. Do you put off-brand stuff into your server racks?
Every one of them is CentOS.
Okay.
We don't install anything.
All right.
But the only reason you do that is because you have a Red Hat contract.
Right. We don't pay for the Red Hat contract.
So. Would I thought you said you guys have one a contract for one server. Mm-hmm.
Nope. I was mistaken.
Oh.
Well, I know if Carl is listening.
He is a Red Hat. The company he works for is a Red Hat partner.
I know. My wife works for that company.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's the marketing director there. And, and in fact, she's going to be at Ohio Linux Fest.
Oh, she's coming with you?
Not exactly, because I'm going down earlier. But she's there representing her company.
Oh, she's going to have a booth?
Yeah, we're doing a job fair. I think I probably talked about it last time, but it's worth mentioning again. If anyone is... who is a Linux sysadmin or whatever, who is looking for employment, we're going to be having a job fair at Ohio Linux Fest. There are a number of companies, and Secure24 is one of the companies that are sending representatives down there. And so if you're looking, bring your resume. I think I was on Tilts a couple of weeks ago, and Dan made a crack about wearing a suit. But my immediate response was, well, I just got a new job, and I wore a suit to my first interview too. I mean, I'm not sure you need to for something like that. But
yeah,
you know, like, come prepared.
The dress code at Linux shops is a little
looser.
Yeah, our dress code is like non-existent. We have one guy that works in the data center that wears shorts and mm-hmm. sandals without socks every day.
Get a little cold in there for him?
Not really. I did tell him the other day, I said, dude, don't you worry that if you drop a server, you're going to lose toes? He goes, I don't plan on dropping a server.
Oh, yeah. And I hope that works out for him. So anyway, Cheryl is going to be there. She's probably coming down Friday afternoon, be there all day Saturday, and then go back up first thing Sunday morning.
Cool.
You know, I'm going to be there. I'm probably get there Thursday afternoon. Probably not get back here until Sunday evening.
Can you guys get into the site early like that on Thursday?
Yeah. I don't know whether I'll have an occasion to, but, you know, on Thursday we're doing things like packing the swag bags, and you know, there's like a million and one little details that go into this. So mostly what happens is I just go there and Moose tells me what to do. So, I'm going to try and hook up. I've been emailing with a fellow that I wanted to hook up with, Andrew Petaniak, who's a open office guru.
Open Office or LibreOffice?
He says Open Office. I got to find out more about that. I'm more of a LibreOffice guy. But I'm teaching the LibreOffice class in our newbie track this year, which is something I have an interest in.
Do you do LibreOffice training consulting-wise?
I haven't.
Would you be interested in it? We'll talk after the show.
Yeah.
I know somebody, a company, very small company that can't afford to pay much,
mm-hmm.
that might be interested in some LibreOffice training.
Yeah, depending on what they're interested in doing. The problem I have with I think a lot of people do that wrong.
Okay.
Too many
training courses that I have seen reinforce bad habits. I've always said that the number one piece of software most misused is a word processor, because there's not one person in 100 that uses it the way they should.
Agreed.
And so my approach is that if you understand how word processors are supposed to be used, it actually doesn't matter. I can use Microsoft Word at work. I can use LibreOffice at home. I can switch back and forth effortlessly because I'm doing really the same things.
Right.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether I'm using Calc or Excel. If you dig into it at the margin, I mean, they're 90% identical. And if you look at the margin, you're going to see differences, some of which actually favor LibreOffice or OpenOffice. I think in terms of the word processing, that is a better program than Microsoft Word.
And another complaint I've heard, too, is text boxes. They say the gyrations you have to go through to insert a text box are ridiculous.
You're already in a text editor. Why do you need a text box?
Because of the way they lay out some of the worksheets, especially in the lower L, grades 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, so they're using it more as like a publishing app instead of a...
It's the way most people use a word processor.
Yeah.
All right.
Are we on again?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Where are we at? We're at the end of the distros.
Yeah, so we continue on to the news.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right. Now, again, I have to apologize to all the listeners out there. I don't really have any original content this week.
No content.
Way too busy. So I've got four stories from the news that struck my fancy, which I'll read brief descriptions of, and there will be links to the actual articles in the show notes. The first is Intel says Clover Trail Atom CPUs can't run Linux. Intel sits in a pretty dominant position in the chip-making business, with the exception of one sector, mobile devices. For smartphones and tablets, ARM is the market leader due to its low power, high-performance chip designs, working so well for those form factors. Intel hopes to change that with the introduction of the next Atom chip, codenamed Clover Trail. But even before the Clover Trail processors are available, Intel has limited the market for them by stating Clover Trail Atom chips will only work with Windows 8. In other words, they won't run Linux, and Intel won't support them running Linux. I think this is a good way to bomb. This chip is going nowhere. Intel can't possibly think this is going to be good for that chip.
Let's eliminate support for 60% of the mobile market
so we can focus
on the 2% that Windows 8 might come
up
with.
Exactly.
Nice.
Android's got to be on like 85% of the mobile market. Smartphones. Granted, not all phones are smartphones, and you do have rims still hanging on by the fingernails out
depending
there.
Depending on how you define it, but the generally accepted figure is that it's in the 60s.
I think it's higher. I think they're being conservative.
I mean, technically, RIM still exists, and it's considered a smartphone.
Yeah. And I just
Windows Phone 7.
I just recently left my BlackBerry for Android, and it was the only reason I left it was because I lost it.
Right.
So, I mean, I like BlackBerry, but I don't know. I just think they're shooting themselves in the foot big time with that.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and the article I pulled that from was on www.geek.com, and the link will be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Next up we have, do your SSL certs meet Microsoft's new requirements? Warning from Microsoft to the entire internet, make sure that your digital certificates are at least 1,024 bits. As of October 9th, 2012, longer key lengths are mandatory for all digital encryption certificates that touch Windows systems. Mm-hmm. This means that Internet Explorer will refuse to access websites that do not have RSA keys within minimum lengths of 1,024 bits. You won't be able to exchange encrypted emails, run ActiveX controls, or install applications on Windows. This isn't new, as Microsoft started making announcements about this well over a year ago. That's only a good thing, requiring the stronger encryption. So,
you know, what people have to realize is that it's an arms race. And so as the technology gets better and we get faster processors, the shorter key lengths are starting to get cracked quickly, and they're not secure anymore.
Yeah.
So
I agree. That's not necessarily
Microsoft's
a bad
right
thing.
On this one.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. However, forcing the user, what I maybe show a warning that this encryption is not up to par and is possibly breakable, yada yada yada, and then letting me make the decision whether I want to go to it or not and do use the stuff there. Mm-hmm. I think is a much better way to go than forcing me and saying no, you cannot do that, because that means I'll never be able to access any of my webmins from Internet Explorer ever again.
Is that a problem?
No.
No, but I see what you're saying, and they are catering to the lowest common denominator. You know, just anybody that doesn't know anything about security, and then they're saying, okay, everybody has to apply to this then. And so there should be a way around it.
Yeah.
But
it's Microsoft.
I'm gonna go with Microsoft. I think they're doing the right thing.
You're banned from the show. No.
Means I'll have to get up early on the morning anymore.
Next up, Motorola Mobility ordered to recall Android tablets and smartphones. The dramatic decision, the latest in an escalating war between Apple and the smartphone and set-top box company MMI, which stands for Motorola Mobility, and I'm not sure what the I stands for, Incorporated maybe, follows earlier cases in which Apple had to disable automatic push delivery of email to its phone and iPads after MMI won a separate patent fight in Germany. The recall will not take effect immediately because Apple will have to request a ban on specific products and provide a 25 million euro or 20 million pound bond while MMI can appeal. And this came from the guardian.co.uk. So this is a British story.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. This worldwide battle is just getting out of hand between these two companies.
Yeah.
And it's different countries are doing different things. Practically the exact same lawsuit that Apple won here, Motorola won in Korea, or no, Samsung won in Korea and in Japan. So it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense.
You know, it doesn't. Simon Phipps posted an interesting article, I think yesterday or maybe the day before, a Stanford law professor who said, you know, if judges would just enforce the law the way it was originally intended, none of this would happen. Because what has happened, the original, there was a thing called functional patenting that was sort of like, you wouldn't just patent this particular mousetrap, you'd patent the idea of mousetraps.
Right.
And a federal judge had said, no, can't do that.
Right.
You know, you're trying to patent the function and not the expression of it. And then,
right.
You know, a bunch of patent holders went to Congress and said, oh, my God, this is terrible. And so they made a slight change. And what has happened is that, in essence, they said if it's embodied in a device, you can patent it. And what has happened is that the software industry took that as a gaping hole they could drive through and say, well, we're doing it on a computer.
Oh.
And so that's why you see all of these things, you know, a method for doing blah, blah, blah on a computer. And then, oh, okay, well, then that's a device. You can patent that. And so you kind of get all of these bizarre patents. And so the Stanford law professor said if judges would just go back to saying, no, that goes too far, we'd get rid of 90% of the patent nonsense.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. You know,
I saw that same article. It was called or maybe it wasn't the same one, but the one I read was called like, "Who would have known that the answer to patent reform existed all along?"
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, I don't know if any of you listen to Security Now, the podcast with Steve Gibson. And he was making the point that what's really happening, and he's a programmer, so. You know, I think he knows what he's talking about. He said a lot of this is just who was the first person to look at this problem. And he said a lot of the stuff that gets patented is stuff that's just freaking obvious. Anyone would have done it that way. And it's just a question of whether the courts are sophisticated enough to know that. So if you take a look at, say, the Google Oracle case, you had William Alsop.
Who was a programmer.
Said, I've written a range check. You're not getting away with this crap. And then you compare that to Judge Lucy Koh in the Apple versus Samsung, and it's like, this is all patentable.
It's just crazy.
And it's nuts.
There should be a specific court to deal with patent issues, and it should be staffed with people who understand what's going on.
In general, yes. Although
you can't have the same judges here in federal narcotics cases here in patent cases. You just can't do it.
They're different things.
It's different. It's
different,
not
kind of law. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
So, and last but not least, we have open source education software unveiled by Google. Online education startups such as the Khan Academy, along with new efforts by MIT, Stanford, and Harvard, have helped spur interest and add legitimacy to the notion of remote learning. Now, Google is lending its brain power to the rapidly growing area by releasing a tool called Course Builder, open source software designed to let anyone create online education courses. Mm-hmm. And this came from www.itproportal.com, and the link will be in the show notes.
They had a video on one of the guys that either helped create it or published or something, and I watched that, and it looked pretty cool.
It did. It did.
Yeah, if you haven't checked it out, go to Coursera, Coursera. I think it's a .com, might be a .org. And that's where a lot of these university courses are up. And, you can sign up, and it shows you what the upcoming courses are. And they've got all sorts of good stuff. And this is being taught by faculty at, like, Stanford and Harvard and MIT. What could possibly be a problem with that, You're getting the top people.
Yeah, that's cool. I had actually signed up for a couple classes on there and then got busy and wasn't able to do anything with them. But it's cool. There was one on security and technology and security and things like that. It's really cool.
Yeah, I was hoping to find one on ITIL, but I didn't see anything there.
What's ITIL?
It stands for Information Technology Infrastructure Library, which doesn't tell you anything at all, does it?
No.
it comes out of UK originally, and what it essentially is all of the best practices for IT.
Oh.
And as I said, I just started this contract with the state of Michigan, and I'm in the IT department. DTMB, as it's called, Department of Technology Management and Budget, and they are trying to become more closely aligned with ITIL practices. Mm-hmm. I thought, I should know more about it, and I was looking for a course.
ITIL's becoming more widely used than some of the other.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't put it together that I thought that the general pronunciation was ITIL.
That sounds like you're being lazy.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I know what you're talking about now.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds really cool.
So, if anyone out there knows of a, nice little free online course on ITIL, let me know.
I'd be interested, too. I was looking into the same thing recently, actually.
Yeah, okay. So, send a comment to Sunday Morning Linux Review if you know of any good resources like that.
Sure, and we'll pass it on to Kevin.
Yeah.
Awesome, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-oh. I don't have any news.
No news at all?
I tried looking through just now, and I couldn't find anything that interesting that I could talk about. I mean, there's one thing. They were talking about 3D printers, bring them home. But that's...
Oh, yeah. Somebody was talking about this on something I was listening to, and they were talking about printing a gun. Print your own gun at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a Tilts?
Tilts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
I don't think that would quite work. It would explode in your hands. But no, I think that 3D printers are the thing of the future.
I do, too. They're very cool for making small pieces of equipment that don't suffer a lot of stress, you could do it a lot. Yeah.
Well, even if you have the right materials, you can do it where you can make it out of stainless steel or you can make it out of, maybe not stainless steel, but other materials you can.
Really?
Yeah.
They're going to be structurally integrated.
I think you can make things out of metal, but
I thought it was more of like a pot metal kind of a thing.
Well, that was my impression. It wasn't like heavy duty steel.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure I'd want to be firing a gun that came out of a 3D printer. that sounds
right.
Sounds like what could go wrong?
Right. Yeah, because that takes an extreme amount of pressure.
What are the most common last words of a hillbilly? And I can say this because I'm a hillbilly. Okay.
Let me show you something.
No. Hold my beer and watch this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, but there's 3D printers that you can use all sorts of different materials. And so there is a way to use, for stronger stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to the sintering. Point.
It has like metal powder and it laser heats it.
Yeah, but that still would be like a pot metal kind of a thing, wouldn't it?
I would think so. I'm not a mechanical engineer, so...
What do you mean by pot metal?
Pot metal is just like a really, really... Not a real strong metal. It's like a tin or a chrome kind of a thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something
okay.
You can make in a pot.
Sure.
Seriously, that's why it's called pot metal.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe we should see if somebody is an expert on 3D printing and see if we can get them on the show.
It sounds good to me.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So if you guys know anybody out there that wants to be interviewed, mm-hmm. get a hold
about
of us.
3D printing. Get a hold of us. show@smlr.us.
So, in prep of this show, I was emailing and talking to Kevin a little bit and said, hey, what do you want to talk about on this show?
And I had something.
Yeah, so go ahead.
Yeah, okay. One of the things that I'm very interested in is the Apple, Android, and everything that's going on in the market dynamics there. And I don't know how many other people care about that sort of thing. I will say that I used to be a economics professor, so I have a certain interest in how these things work. And if you find that sort of thing interesting, I'll also mention Eric Raymond on his blog talks about these things, along with a lot of other things. Eric has never been short of opinions, but
that's putting it mildly.
But he does talk about this, and my thesis, which Matt thought was rather insane, is why Apple is in long-term trouble, and I'm going to explain why I think that. Okay. So if we take smartphones, let's review.
Hang on a second. Define long term.
10 years?
No.
Go ahead. Okay. We take smartphones. Apple, kicked off this market, I think is fair to say. I mean, people will say that, BlackBerry's a smartphone. BlackBerry was just an email device.
Correct. What we think of a smartphone, definitely the iPhone was the initiator.
What we're talking about at that point is really, at this point, a computer in your pocket. And that's what... I saw a great cartoon the other day, 10 years ago, and the guy's holding up a phone. You can also send text messages. And the other guy says, well, why would I want to do that if I could just call people? And then today... And you can also make phone calls. And the other guy said, well, why would I do that if I could send a text message? a lot has changed. So the first iPhone was unveiled January 2007, first of its kind. In 2007, it leapt to 2.7% of the mobile phone market. All right. 2008, 9.6% of the mobile phone market. 2009, 15.1%. That's reasonable growth. Now, that's the total mobile phone market. So we're talking about Nokia candy bar phones and all, you know, clamshell phones and all of those other kinds of things. In November of 2007, the Open Handset Alliance was announced, and the very first version of Android was unveiled. September of 2008, the G1 was released with Android 1.0. By the end of 2008, Android had grabbed 0.5% of the mobile phone market. So, by the end of 2008, Android 0.5%, Apple 9.6% of the total mobile phone market. So, in 2009, Android grows to 4.7%, Apple's 15.1%. So, you know, by the end of 2009, Android's market share is less than a third of Apple's. By November of 2010, 11 months later, Android was slightly ahead of Apple, 26% to 25%. 10 months after that, September 2011, Android is at 44%, Apple's at 27%, and now we're looking at Android worldwide, and I say worldwide because a lot of the numbers people look at only focus on the U.S. market. And, you know, as long as you understand that's what you're looking at, Apple has a higher share in the United States than it does anywhere else in the world. And that's what we're looking
it's
at.
Because of the cost.
I think that's a big factor.
Yeah, and I think another factor in the fact that Android has such a huge market share is they're available from many different manufacturers.
Absolutely. So, that's one of the strengths of the Android ecosystem. What that tells me is that Apple was first to market, and it gets a certain first mover advantage. And in the case of the phone, that lasted about 3 years before the competition caught up to it. Now, what would happen if we applied the same reasoning to the tablet market? Right, iPad was introduced in January of 2010. Last figures I saw suggested that, you know, they're down to about 65% of the market now. At the end of 2011, I think it was 75%. Android is rising. At the end of 2011, it was about 25% of the market. I think it's approaching 40% now. Now, you have to think about adding in Amazon Kindle, which is Android-based, even if you don't see it when you're looking at it. It is Android under Amazon's skin. And if you track those market share numbers, and you go back, you do an analysis, you say, let's look at, for phones, if you throw out all of the clamshells and candy bars and everything else and just take smartphones and look at those market share numbers, and then look at the market share numbers on tablets, it tracks pretty damn closely. In other words, if Apple is less than half of Android on the phone market now, that suggests Apple will be less than half of Android in the tablet market in another year or two. So why is that?
I think mostly that can be attributed to the fact that you can buy Android tablets from so many different manufacturers and your only source for the iPad is Apple.
Right. Exactly the same situation has happened with phones. So a very interesting book that I used in
my advanced classes was by a professor at the Harvard Business School named Michael Porter, and the book was called The Competitive Advantage of Nations. And in this book, Professor Porter took a look at how countries will excel in a particular market. So, you know, you could say that, for instance, the, you know, Italian economy is very good with shoes or fashions, and, you know, the German optics and, you know, Swiss watches and stuff like that. And there's reasons for all of that. And in the case of Japan, what he focused on, and this book was published in 1990, was the consumer electronics market. And at that time, if you can remember back to the late 80s, early 90s, Japan was basically kicking ass and taking names in that whole space. American manufacturers were just going out of business or dropping out of that market because they couldn't compete. And he looked at it and he said, well, there's a reason for that. The reason is, if you take a look at the home market in Japan, those consumers are absolutely nuts about consumer electronics. They love the stuff, and they will pay over and over to get the latest technology. So the product cycles in Japan, as a result of that, had shrunk to about 6 months. So a product could be introduced in January, be a huge hit for a couple of months. By June, it's not even available anymore. It's been pulled off the market and replaced by something new. And what Professor Porter said is, if you can survive in the Japanese market, then, you know, the rest of the world is a piece of cake, because you will never face competition that hard anywhere else in the world. To me, what that says, and I thought about that, and I linked that to the whole idea of evolution and intelligent design, which I think there is a linkage there, because the idea of evolution is, when you have a very competitive environment, evolution proceeds very rapidly and comes up with very elegant solutions. And I'm thinking about that now in terms of what is happening with Apple and all of its competitors. And it's Apple versus Samsung, Motorola, HTC, Huawei, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of them out there. And even if you grant, I'm not sure this is true, but let's say pound for pound, Apple's developers are better than anyone else's. But there's not that many of them. For all the competition they're facing, in the Android market, companies are just trying, innovating, throwing things up, throw it up on the wall and see if it sticks. And they are very innovative in that way. To the point that if we take a look at what is happening in the smartphone market now, and as we're recording this, just a few days ago, Apple announced the iPhone 5, and I'm looking at the tech press, and what I'm seeing is, meh, Apple's catching up to Android.
Yeah, you know what, Kevin, I don't disagree. However, you also have to weigh the human factor in. And Apple doesn't sell a piece of technology. They sell a culture.
Right.
And that's what drives their sales. I don't see them going below 15% for the next 20 years.
Yeah, possibly. One of the interesting things, this is an unintended consequence perhaps, but if you take a look at the Samsung versus Apple trial, and I would first of all caution anyone that the result of that trial is a preliminary result.
Yeah,
there's a lot.
To say the
there's
least.
A lot of lawyering still to happen here, that one, Apple in the first round prevailed and got an award of $1 billion.
But the only reason they prevailed was because there was a ringer on the jury who snuck in.
Right. Which, interestingly enough, was someone, this is why I hesitated earlier when you said, you know, patents should only be decided by people who are knowledgeable about it.
Well, he's not knowledgeable. He's a patent owner, which gives him a conflict of interest, really, instead of knowledge.
Indeed. And that was definitely a mistake by Samsung's legal team. But the interesting unintended consequence, Gartner showed that demand for Samsung went up after that was announced.
I missed that. That's pretty cool.
Because, well, think about it. What was the trial telling everyone? Samsung is exactly like Apple, but cheaper.
Right.
You know? That's a very, you know, Apple might have been better off if they had gotten the result they got in England. Now, I don't know if you remember the judge in England when there was a suit there and ordered Apple to basically to take out ads and put something on their website saying Samsung did not come and made the comment that, you know, Samsung's not capable of being that cool.
Right. Yeah.
And Apple might have been better served by that because it would have reinforced their mystique, whereas this particular case was, folks, this is technology. Yeah. Now,
And you know what a real problem I have with lawsuits like that one, too? Mm-hmm. No one, I don't care how big an idiot you are, is going to walk into a store looking for an iPhone and accidentally walk out in Samsung. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. You know, some of us,
I meant to say effing. Now Tony has to bleep my comment.
Of course, there's people like me that walk into a store and say, don't show me any of that Apple crap. I want Android.
Too. No consumer is going to accidentally buy a Samsung instead of an Apple product. It's not going to happen. First of all, Apple's marketing doesn't permit it to be marketed on the same shelf as other products. It has to be marketed separately and by itself.
Right.
You know, there may be people that walk in there with the intent of getting something like an Apple phone, and if they get it, they'd be happy. But if somebody else convinced them otherwise, then they can, you know.
Right, I agree. But they didn't accidentally buy the Samsung.
There are several problems here. One of them is that, first of all, the iPhone makes a lot of money for Apple.
Oh, yeah.
It does not make any money for anyone else in the ecosystem. The carriers are, at this point, just about losing money on every iPhone they sell. Hmm. Because they're paying Apple for the privilege of carrying the phone. And, you know, it adds up. You know, Sprint gave Apple like $13 billion to get iPhone on their network, and if you take a look at the numbers, it's almost impossible for them to come out ahead on that deal.
Well, but they make it up on the service end.
Well,
break even, because they wouldn't.
I think carriers make more money per phone on Android phones than they do on iPhone.
On the actual phone, but on the service is where they're going to make up the difference. There really are, and I have to say this. I do have an iPhone on my Sprint account because it's my daughter's, who's a Macophile, and mm-hmm. She's my daughter. She gets what she wants.
Hey, but anyway, I'm married. The boss gets what she wants.
but it's definitely because when you buy the iPhone from Sprint, mm-hmm. all you do is buy the phone. We bought an additional warranty. That's through Apple. Any problems with the phone, we don't go back to Sprint. We go to Apple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, they're not trying to make money on the phone. They're trying to make money on the service, because now my service bill went up a significant amount when I added that Apple. So mm-hmm. that's where they're making their money up.
Right. Now, if I take a look at tablets, and, you know, my thesis is the tablet market is going to evolve the same way the phone market did. And I think you were starting to see, you know, initially, you know, the iPad comes out, and up until a few months ago, what you were seeing in all of the trade press and everything is iPad is the only tablet out there. Don't even look at anything else. It's all crap. Forget about it. And then what happened was the Nexus 7. And all of a sudden, you started to see people say, well, wait a minute. This is good. This can compete. Now, that's just the you know, if you take a look at
the time it takes. You know, Apple jumped out to a lead, and, you know, good for them. They put the product out there. They earned that opportunity. But we're going to see all of that same innovation going on now. And now we're saying, you know, Apple has to respond. And they're expecting, well, Apple will come out with a 7-inch tablet maybe next month. They might announce that. But in other words, we're already starting to see the same pattern of Apple responding to Android. You know, it starts with Android catching up to Apple, and at some point Apple has to start catching up to Android. Right now, I would say the best and most innovative phones on the market are Android phones. If you want to just get the best phone, period, Android. You know, maybe a Galaxy S3 might be the best one at the moment, but Android's providing that. And I think within a year or two, you're going to say the same thing in tablets. Now, the problem for Apple is that if people start to see that I can get all the functionality I want at a much lower price, that puts a lot of pressure on Apple. They've made a ton of money on the idea that we can give you something no one else can, and it's worth a premium price.
You know, I disagree, Kevin. I think that, sure, you're going to capture that Apple consumer that was just a peripheral Apple consumer, but you're never going to ever capture that diehard Apple fan. And I think that's going to account for about 15% of the market for at least the next 20 years because they sell the culture.
Yeah, but I still think that creates a long-term problem for Apple.
Well, yeah. Look, you got a point there, though.
Look at their history of, well, they almost went under in the mid-90s, yeah. And they've come back.
The iPod saved them. They've driven, Jobs was a genius and drove the iPad into the culture, which then translated into the Mac stuff and then translated mm-hmm. into the iPhone stuff.
Right. I can see how the same thing can happen again. But, you know, that's if they don't do something new. You know, if they don't continue to or come up with something new because Jobs did a lot of that and he's gone. You know, so I can see Kevin's side. I don't agree with 10 years, but I agree that they're not going to be number one in 10 years.
No. Oh, I agree that in 10 years they won't be number one.
Right.
However, they're going to hang on to 15% of the market at least for a long time.
Well, that could be.
We'll have to see. Let's say in 10 years we get together. We'll do an SMLR reunion.
Okay. And
yeah, it
well, and this is all our opinions.
I'm not saying that they would be bankrupt, but I think you would start to see definitely a very much smaller, less dominant Apple that is facing strategic challenges. Let's do a comparison. Microsoft.
That's not apples to apples. Microsoft is a completely different culture, and they're not selling a culture.
Right.
They're strong arming manufacturers.
I think Microsoft is a culture, but it's a different one. Microsoft is enterprise. They're not a consumer products company. They stopped being a consumer products company some years back.
Okay.
They're still dominant there, but you know, when you go into the enterprise, it's Windows, it's Office, it's SharePoint, it's, you know, Outlook, it's, you know.
Yeah, I'll give you
that's
that.
That's what drives enterprise.
I'll give you that. They are the enterprise.
Right.
So
basically, I'm seeing a lot more innovation coming from outside of Apple. And that creates a long-term problem for them. That's my thesis.
Yeah,
yeah. And you're right. I don't see them being the dominant player that they are. But I'll stand by that 15% for 20 years. That's just a gut feeling.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, they're trying to manipulate. It was very interesting how they. In order to create the appearance of huge demand, they have restricted the supply of the new iPhones very, very much.
Yes.
Because, by golly, they've got to get those lines to show something. And, you know, I mean, the last iPhone 4S people were going, meh. And, you know, it's the same thing now. And the other thing is that some of Apple's mystique is starting to rub off because of the things that they're doing. I'm at least... I'm starting to see that instead of everyone saying, oh, Apple is the most innovative company around, they're starting to say things like, come on, rounded rectangles? You got a patent on that crap?
Yeah, well, they did do some silly things now, don't get me wrong. Yeah. And I'm not an Apple lover by any stretch of the imagination, don't get me wrong there either. But I just think that they did a really, really good job,
right.
of selling Apple as a culture.
Yeah, and he's not there.
Right, but I think that can continue.
Well, it didn't the last time he wasn't there.
Yeah, that's a good point. But,
and,
but
you
it's
know,
different the, circumstances, him not being there now.
Is there a Jobs out there now? If there is, and I'm not sure, but if there is, I'd bet his name is Jeff Bezos.
I'd have to know who Jeff Bezos was to
yeah,
get
I don't
that
know.
Reference.
Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
And if you watched the...
Maybe, except that Kindle Fire was a bomb.
Well, it's not the best product around.
You know, they came out with a new one, too.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Did they call it the Kindle 7? Or the Fire 7 or something? I don't know where that...
The original Kindle Fire was a 7-inch. Now they've come out with a 10-inch.
Oh, okay.
Among other things. But it's very interesting. Jeff Bezos... you know, he did this whole the product unveiling thing in a very Jobsian manner, but a very interesting difference because Apple is a hardware company fundamentally.
Yes.
So everything is about buy the new device, buy the new device, buy the new device.
And they're getting more that way and making it, because you know what they're doing now?
What's that?
They're soldering the RAM on.
So there's no way to upgrade?
Nope.
In their laptops and
yep.
their desktops?
Right.
Really?
Specifically the laptops, because they're going for the thinner, lighter, and the way to do that is to solder it on.
Yeah.
I suppose if you want to stop people from upgrading your equipment and not buying the newest thing, then that would be what to
and
do.
I'm sure that's their entire plan.
Have you noticed that over time, hardware prices only go down?
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be also a problem?
I'm an old guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm sorry I just said that. But,
but you're old.
I remember. Yeah, they bust my balls all the time at work about it. But anyway, I'm like older than the owner of the company. But anyway.
That's not hard to do, man.
I think you're younger than I am, though, Matt.
I don't know about that.
I'm 61.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I would have put you definitely right around my age, which is 47.
Yeah. No.
So I look older than Kevin.
Yeah, I would have said maybe early 50s.
Thank you. But. Thank you. That was the right answer. But in fact, I was born in August of 1951.
Well, then
you
remember this too. Remember back in the day when hardware, you could make money selling hardware.
Sure.
And lots of people did it, you know. Now you can't make your margins on hardware are like 1%, 2%. It's,
right.
It's impossible.
And the only reason Apple gets bigger margins is all this mystique.
Yeah.
And their mystique took a hit in the Samsung trial. Whether they intended it or
that's
not.
That's a good. I never actually looked at that way. And that
now
that's
the interesting
good.
Thing is that Jeff Bezos was sort of poking at Apple in particular and other device makers in general when he did this unveiling and he was saying, you know, if you've got a Kindle that's working fine, you don't need to buy a new one. He said, we don't make money selling Kindles.
No, they're
we make money selling you things that
content,
you use
yeah.
on a Kindle. And we're more than happy if you buy a Kindle and keep using it for 5, 10, 15 years. We have no problem with that at all. Just, you know, keep buying the books, movies.
Yeah.
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 And that's because he's in a very different business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's... you know, we economists have a saying, prediction is really hard, especially when it's about the future. you know, I'm not saying that Amazon is the next Apple or Bezos is the next Jobs, but they're doing very interesting things. And, you know, I can really see that content may be the business you want to be in now going into the future and not hardware or software.
Yeah, I think we're definitely moving more and more towards a content-driven economy with electronics, because, you know, the consumer doesn't really care. The consumer doesn't care what device, for the most part, what device they're using, what application they're using, as long as they can get the content they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely the way the market's going.
So right.
You might be right.
Yeah. Well, you'll have me back on in 10 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll have you back on in 10 years.
So, anyway, that was the topic I brought in. So I think we had some good discussion with it.
Yeah.
So there is no game this week, so we're sorry for all of the fans out there who like the game. But Mary provides that, and she's not here.
Hey, I'm looking through my IEC channels, and XTOF says, Apple, you should see my opossum video.
His possum video?
Yeah. So.
Why is that either amusing, A, or B, interesting?
Because we're talking about it, and I guess he's, I don't know. And he has a link in YouTube. It's actually on the MD Lug channel.
Oh, is that one that was taken over by the other lug because they thought it was theirs?
Not taken over.
They were using it.
Yeah. And I pulled it back to our stuff, but yeah.
So what was the name of the lug that hijacked it?
I can't pronounce it, but it was MD was their, it was the city's name.
Yeah.
It was in Germany.
And they hijacked our channel on IRC.
They started using it.
Mm-hmm.
It's because nobody at our MD Lug was using it. And I'm the only one that's been on it except for
some of the German guys.
Right. But it's interesting. I got to talk to some of the German, there's a German
sound
lady
like
that.
A problem.
Right. Yeah, I don't think it's a problem, but I there was a German lady on there. I got to chat up a little bit, and that's where I found out a little bit of the history. And she had been on it ever since, you know, the late 2000s.
Right. Well, speaking of lugs, we're going to get a speaker to talk about hardening your home Linux computer this coming Thursday at the Washtenaw Lug.
So, oh.
Yeah.
Is it going to be SE Linux or AppArmor or just generic hardening?
I don't know. I'm not the speaker.
Well, you'll have to come and see it, man. You'll have to come and see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Wash Lug?
Lugwash is what we call it, or WLUG.
WLUG, Washtenaw Linux Users Group.
It's lugwash.org.
Yeah, out in the A squared area.
The boonies.
All right.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
Yes, listener feedback.
And we've got quite a bit this week. Let's see. I went through and was compiling it as Kevin was talking. But Rob Wooden, he says that he's decided to leave Mint. He was having problems and stuff, so. And I.
Yeah, but he's going to Ubuntu.
Yeah, well, you know what? There's so many distros out there. Use what works for you.
I hear you. Wait, and I am not opposed to switching distros, in case anybody out there hasn't noticed.
You're not.
No. But I don't know.
Right.
Maybe my entire problem with Ubuntu is, like Kevin pointed out earlier, I just don't like them because they're number one.
Well, yeah. I think there's a certain amount of that goes on. Well, the other thing about Unity, I just point out that if you are going to innovate, by definition, you're going to have to do something different. That's the only possible way to innovate that I know of, is
right,
to try something different. So, I mean, I don't fault them for doing that. I mean, again, it's sort of like, you know, they're making a certain play. They're saying, okay, Linux got 0.5% of the desktop market by appealing to geeks. That's about how many geeks there are. If we're going to grow it, we better appeal to other people, and that's their attempt to do it. Now, I don't know whether it's going to work or not, but I don't fault them for making the effort. You got to try stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it only gets better over time. And now it's been out for a couple of years, and it's got over a year and a half, so it's getting better.
Yeah, it was the default a year ago on the 11.10, as I recall.
Yeah, it's coming up on a year.
It was experimentally around on 11.04.
Yeah, but nobody used it, so you can't really. Nobody.
I'm not sure anyone should have used it at 11.10. but with 12.04, it is in fact pretty reasonable. They're still working on it. I understand 12.10. It's going to be much improved again. And there's some good stuff in there. The lenses are I think, an interesting feature.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. And then we have Rob. He was looking at Mary's screenshots from her review, and he says that he likes her desktop and was wondering about how she had it set up. So I know that was a comment on our website, and then Mary emailed him back. So maybe I'll get her to stick that on the comment.
She included us in the email.
Right. Yeah, we did. But I don't want to put it on there unless Mary says we can. You know? I don't know. I didn't read through it, but
well, anyway. I mean, Mary uses KDE as her desktop environment, so that's a big clue.
I think once she includes the show in the reply, that's fair game.
I don't know, because I reply to you guys that I wouldn't want put on the website.
Well, that's different. That's talk between us, and I do the same thing. This involved a listener.
Okay. Yeah, I guess so. And then, is it Claudio? I think he's actually listening right now. Yeah.
And I don't have that. I don't have that one.
Yeah, that was on our Google Plus page. Well, he referred to the Sunday Morning Linux Review in one of his posts, so it hit us as an alert. And he says that he's enjoying his Manic Monday with the Sunday Morning Linux Review. And then he got a couple other comments where Steve Barry's listening to us. He says he's going to add it in, listen to us. And so that's cool. Thanks for putting out the word. And did you have anything else?
Yeah, we had a comment on the website from, I hope I'm saying her name correctly. If it is a her, I believe it would be Tomika Mija. And she says, nice shares. The one about Google overtaking Firefox as the most used browser in the world is not shocking. It was an inevitable change. By the way, you're right about these business sites that aren't mobile SEO friendly. It is starting to become a huge deal since the growth of the smartphone industry is continuous. So does the importance of mobile SEO. And I'm not sure what she's talking about, because she's referring to like something that happened on episode 20. So I didn't go back and re-listen to the episode, but thanks for the comment there, Tomika.
Yeah, all right.
David Ellis, the guy that had that other comment you talked about, also said something to Mary. He said, sorry for forgetting to put this in my last email. This is to Mary. Mary, you don't need to make a cheat sheet for Pac-Man. Just go to, there's a big link there that I'm not going to say. For a kind of graphical Pac-Man front end, take a look at Yaoult.
I'm sure I didn't say that right either.
It's Y-A-O-U-R-T, Yaoult.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It looks like yogurt, but without the G.
Yes, exactly. And A for the O, for the start of O.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to put that link in the show notes. And then I haven't done this in the past, but because I'm very busy this week, I am going to recycle a song.
Wait, we have one more thing before we get to the music. Hey, Kevin, what's the website for the Ohio Linux Fest?
Why, thank you for bringing that up. It is ohiolinux.org. And actually, I'll mention one other thing. I don't think I've mentioned on here, although I think, Tony, you might have brought it up, and that is we have an entertainer now for the Saturday party, MC Frontalot, and you have to buy a ticket to get into this party. It's a $5 ticket. In return for your $5, you get some light munchies and one drink, so it pays for itself. But there's only a limited space and limited number of tickets. So go and register.
I've got a question. So before this was announced that he was going to be on there, I bought a ticket to the Saturday. Is that the same ticket, or do I have to go buy a different
thing? No, nope, that's it.
I thought our show was invited to that party.
We were invited to a party on Saturday. Is that the same one?
We were invited to set up at a party on Saturday as a show, as our show. And I don't remember. You wanted to do a presentation, but they turned us down for the presentation, but said, come to the party, come set up at the party.
I am going
to be the Friday night, maybe? I don't know why you'd be doing a show in a nightclub with entertainment.
Yeah, not doing a show.
But there's the Friday night party. That might make sense.
I don't know. I don't remember what it was for.
Moose, but anyway. Moose emailed us.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'd like to invite you to participate in this year's Ohio Linux Fest by being part of the Friday night party.
That makes more sense. Yeah.
This year we're having a slumber party.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Matt, you do have to buy a ticket if you want to go.
Damn.
It's $5.
Hey, if you buy the professional training, does that get you into the party?
No.
Damn.
It's $5.
I'm about to buy the professional training right now live online.
Oh, cool. All right.
I'm going to go, too.
Put the camera on him.
The camera's broken. I broke the camera again.
Now, let me see if I'm doing this right. I'm on the registration page. It says ohiolinux.org/register.
Okay?
And I'm looking down here, and it says professional registration. And then it says OLF Institute. And over on the right, it says I want to take the LPI CRAM. So it's already pre-checked for me at the top. It says this is a full-day class and is pre-checked.
Okay. Now, it's a full-day class, so you're all set. Yep. It's already checked.
I just click Add to Cart, right?
Right.
So I'm adding that to my cart.
It's the morning class, afternoon class. I don't want to opt into the announcement. How do I? Oh, it says no. Okay,
no.
That's right.
All right, and now it's there, $350, and now I click Checkout.
Yeah.
Now, when you add that, do you have to add part one and part two?
No, it says the full-day class, so it did the whole thing for me.
Right.
Now I have to put in an email address.
Actually, on the afternoon, it says, no afternoon half class. Select this if taking LPIC CRAM.
Oh, yeah, and like Matt said, it does automatically. The coding and the when you choose it, it automatically chooses.
At the top, it says full-day class.
Right.
Did you opt in for the vendor announcements?
I did not.
I do not want the vendor announcements.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's my name. Google was happy to autofill it for me, so my name's there, my company name is there, my address is there, my postal code, my phone number.
We're all set.
Shoe
credit,
size?
Credit card? No, shoe size is not there. However, they do want a credit card number now.
Yeah.
I assume that would be a good way to pay for it.
They don't take Bitcoin?
No.
Did you see there was another big robbery? Did you see there was another big robbery on Bitcoin? Somebody got 24 grand. Somebody stole 24 grand.
How does that happen? What, do they hack into somebody's account?
I think that's how it has to happen.
This was in addition to the pyramid scheme that Richard was talking about?
What pyramid scheme that Richard was talking about? I don't even know who Richard is.
On Tilts.
I listened to the first part of the show, and I didn't get to that
point. He's the Bitcoin guy on Tilts.
Yeah.
He was telling about how someone set up this scheme where they made it sound like they had a Bitcoin bank, and if you gave them money, they would invest it and pay interest, and it did pay interest for a few weeks, and he had like $500,000 worth of Bitcoins and suddenly disappeared.
Oh. Yeah, that's
maybe that's how
there
they
was
did
also
it.
Another robbery a few months ago where somebody got like $80,000 in bitcoins from somewhere.
Huh.
Yeah. So the value of bitcoins has been plummeting.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I think that stuff about how this is going to replace real money, you can probably forget about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Entered my CIV. Order comments. Use this area for special instructions or questions regarding your order.
I'm fat and don't like to move too much. Can we make this close to the entrance? Is that an acceptable one?
Okay. Review order. I'm now clicking review order. And it says, cart contents, professional registration, morning class LPI certification cram session. This is a full day class. Afternoon class, no afternoon half class. Select this if taking LPIC cram. So it auto-selected that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Opt-in, announce, and vendor mailing lists? No. Then it has my email address, my company name, my address. Subtotal 350, total 350.
Aren't you going to add your ticket for the Friday for the Saturday party?
Not at this time.
Not at all. Well. All right.
And now I'm submitting the order. It says, your order is complete. Your order number is 1651.
Do I have to write that down, Kevin?
No.
Okay.
Thank you for shopping at Ohio Linux Fest. who came up with this wording? Thank you for shopping at Ohio Linux Fest.
Yeah, that's my phone. I just got an email. My current order has been attached to the account we found matching your email address. Oh, I guess because I had registered already, I have an account. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Log in to view your current order status and order history. Remember to log in when you make your next purchase.
Now, I have a question. Now, I just bought the training, okay?
Right.
How do I buy the exam on Sunday?
That's a darn good question. I think you have to arrange that with LPIC.
Yeah, you do? Because I thought that's what it said from what the way I read it, but I wasn't sure. So
yeah,
because
it says it's $99 for the...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you have to pay it to LPIC, and you have to register with LPIC.
I believe so.
To get it. So I will have to. I will also sign up for the exam, but I have to do that at a different time.
I wouldn't wait because they said you have to do it ahead of time.
That's ahead of time.
I know. Don't wait till the day you get there. All right.
So yeah, I'll do that today. Also, I'm going to sign up for the exam. I used my business account, too, so I can hide that expense from my wife.
Yeah.
And she doesn't listen to the show, so I'm cool. That was me also getting an email.
Your boss is buying your...
No. Yeah, I am my boss.
I know.
Yeah.
Although they do reimburse for certifications if you pass at work, so we'll see.
No. Okay.
All right.
Make sure you pass.
Maybe.
Do you know anything about Linux?
No. I'm a first-time user.
Funny.
Yeah, Dan Washko was...
I was
saying,
actually...
You could go Friday and take the intro to Linux and get the laptop and then, get the classes on Saturday and then Sunday take your exam. And it's like, Dan, it's just that easy.
Well, the class is on Friday too, right? The LPI?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't want it falling like Indiana Linux Fest happened for me.
Yeah.
Where the whole convention, I was in the Drupal class instead of going to the convention.
Yeah.
But.
Well, if
so that's why I like this
a deep
much better.
Need to learn Drupal, I suppose that was okay, but.
Yeah. Well, I do, and I'm still learning. Okay. So.
You know?
Yeah, but still, I really like the way Ohio Linux does it versus Indiana Linux.
Mm-hmm.
You have it on the Friday, that's when the training is, so
right.
That you can take the training and still attend the convention.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
And
yeah.
Well, in defense of Indiana Linux Fest, they did that. They had puppet classes and they had LPI training on Friday on Friday, and then Saturday was the convention. It just happened to be that the instructor for Drupal couldn't do it Friday, and he did it on Saturday.
Well, he should not have been allowed there.
Right.
I also because I was kind of torn between I was actually considering taking the beginning puppet class and then in the afternoon take tuning the performance tuning class, but I decided to go for the certification instead. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking for
certification looks much better on the resume than I took a class.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's what I thought too.
Kevin. Yeah. One day intro to puppet.
No, half a day intro to puppet.
Half a day.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, and it's good stuff. But as a resume line, it probably wouldn't be a great thing.
And it's only good now if I actually pass on Sunday.
Right.
Right.
Well, I took the training a year ago, but I didn't pass a test.
I think at that point it wouldn't be on the resume.
Exactly.
All right, so is there anything else?
No, I don't have anything else.
No, anyone has any ideas on ITIL training? In fact, I wouldn't mind getting the foundation certification. So send those ideas in, folks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, cool.
Featured music of the week.
This week, I am going to recycle a song I've already used.
No!
Oh!
It's one of my favorite songs. It's by Brad Sucks. Look and Feel Years Younger.
Just trying to act my age.
Yeah, I wanna know.
All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review.
What's the name of this episode, Tony?
I was going to call it Welcome Back, Kevin.
All right.
I like that.
All right. For episode 49, this is Tony Bemis.
And Matt Enders.
And Kevin O'Brien.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
All right.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition. Liftoff.
We are counting down to the 10th annual Ohio Linux Fest. Join us in Columbus for a weekend jam-packed with your favorite open-source software. On Friday, get professional training at Ohio Linux Fest Institute, or come to see the Early Penguins Talks. Saturday brings a full set of presentations, including the new Beginner's Track. Don't forget to stop by the display booths featuring prominent vendors and community projects. Sunday wraps up with LPI and BSDA certification exams, as well as the Diversity and Open Source Workshop. It all happens September 28, 29, and 30 at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. Visit ohiolinux.org for all the details.
Okay.
We are back up and running.
It thinks we have run.
Copy the file off the disk, format it, and that fixes it.
That seems like it's a bit arduous, but okay.
I know. You would think there's an actual fix for it somewhere out there, but...
Any port in a story.
Hey, Tony, wait a minute. Let's check here. Tony, have you read the manual at all?
No. You had the manual for a week, did you?
I did.
And what should I have done?
I have no idea.
All right.
I didn't read that part properly.
Tony, did you fix it?
Yes, it's fixed.
Then you did the right thing.
All right. I guess there's a difference between getting it done and maybe an elegant way to do it.
There's no extra points for elegance on this one.
All right.